Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 166. Our guest this week is a musician, a live streamer, a cosplayer, although possibly has only done one cosplay. We will get to that. And I believe has done their master's thesis on chiptune, which we will also get to. We have Bad Hairline Productions. Thank you for being here.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
First thing I have to ask, kind of slightly off topic, but you are German, you are into heavy metal. One of my all-time favorite bands is Blind Guardian. I have to know if you're into Blind Guardian.
Absolutely. I love Blind Guardian. Great band. Amazing band.
Are they big in Germany?
I mean, they're like not big as in like mainstream big necessarily, but you know, people who are into heavy metal over here, we kind of like Blind Guardian, but the heavy metal crowd is weird just because they're so into like teams of, okay, I like power metal, I like thrash metal, I like black metal, and so the people who don't like power metal, they're gonna hate Blind Guardian just because.
Right.
But overall, I would say Blind Guardian is a very popular band among the metalheads over here.
Right. That was they've been such a weird band for me. I found them, do you remember Newgrounds?
Yeah.
A super old website, and someone had done a fan-made video for the Bard song, and I knew nothing about any of it, and I listened, and I was like, I don't know what this is, but this is absolutely my kind of music. And then I ended up finding like a bunch of friends at school. That's how we like bonded. It's like, you like Blind Guardian? I like Blind Guardian. Anyway.
That stuff is really great, and they're so versatile as a band. And I mean, the singer, Hansi Kirsch, they call him like the Freddie Mercury of heavy metal.
Oh, really?
For a reason. He's an amazing singer, amazing showman, and yeah, just overall good stuff. They did like concept albums on like Lord of the Rings and all kinds of crazy stuff. I love it.
Yeah, me too. So let's start with you are a self-taught musician. You started on bass, then you went guitar. This was as a teenager. You weren't even really into music as a little kid. When you got your bass, was it just like an immediate like, oh, this is my thing now, I love music now? Or how did you become such, because now you make music all the time. How did you get to that point?
Yeah, it was actually kind of weird. Yeah, like I said, I didn't grow up in a musical family. Music wasn't really a thing when I was a kid. But when I was like in grade 8 or 9, a buddy of mine said, hey, I started learning how to play electric guitar. And then another guy from where he lived, he started playing drums. And we were like, haha, if we only had a bass player, it could form a band. So, you know, that day I was like, okay, I'm going to start playing bass. I want to play in a band. That idea just seemed appealing to me. And that's pretty much how it started. And I realized, okay, I wasn't too bad at it compared to many other things that I tried as a child. And so I just kind of stuck with it, and it became like my favorite toy, just playing bass all the time. And then a year later, just buying a guitar, same thing, it became my favorite toy. I didn't want to do anything besides play music from that point on.
Did you take lessons at all, or were you purely self-taught?
So on guitar, I was completely self-taught. On bass, I had somebody show me a few things just for the start. But it wasn't like super intense or anything like that. It's just like, okay, this is how you put your right hand on the pickup and play and pick the strings and whatnot. But I figured out most of the stuff honestly by myself, even at that point, like all the music theory things. And it's like, okay, this is a triad. Okay, what happens if I move it around? And like, just slowly but surely, I just tried to learn songs by ear, tried to figure out why these songs worked. So, and that part of me is still kind of self-taught in many ways. I just love to figure out music all on my own without anyone having the balls to tell me what to do.
And when did video game music become, you know, your thing? When did you go from, okay, I'm in bands right now, now I want to do like video game covers?
That really only happened quite recently. Since I didn't have like a very musical childhood, but I did play a few video games when I was younger, That was kind of the soundtrack of my childhood. So even when I was playing in my teenage years, like more standard, you know, rock and metal stuff, until I moved to like fusion and jazz later on, there was always the side of me that always wanted to know how to play like weird stuff. Like little memes, little jingles, and then that obviously led me to video game music. So okay, this is how to play the Mario Bros. Theme. Haha, funny. And that really started to become bigger once I was a jazz player and hanging out with all these jazz musicians, and we were talking about like, hey, that Super Mario stuff, that's really jazzy. How about we play that? And so I just, you know, wrote a few arrangements for like horns or big bands, and started playing some video game music with my fusion trio at the time. That would have been like 2016, 17-ish. And we wrote this Pokemon medley that we actually wanted to record in a studio at the beginning of 2020, when obviously all the restrictions started, so we couldn't do that, we couldn't go into a studio. And I just sat at home, then had all the sheet music prepared for the studio, looking at the medley there, thinking, God damn, I really want to record it. Let me just sit down and write the drum part for it, and then I can just record all the guitar and bass stuff on my own at home, and I can just record this whole thing, you know, without my band. And that's how I really started the whole YouTube side of video game music for me, and the whole really digging super deep into video game music. That was like the once the pandemic started. I was used to having like 5 or 6 rehearsals each week and like 2 or 3 gigs. All of that just went away and I had to do something, and so that turned into I record at least one song every single day, and I've been doing so since April 2020.
Were your bandmates at all like, hey, we were a part of that?
Yeah, I mean, I still play with those guys. You know, they're still my friends. So, I'm kind of putting the band back. Together now after COVID, because I moved away a few times over the last few years, so we couldn't play even once the restrictions had ended. But you know, they know it. You know, I love these guys. You know, they were obviously very important in this whole development. I just took it a few steps too far.
You're still self-teaching. You're learning, at this point you're quite good at it, but you self-taught yourself on piano using video game music. I'm wondering, what would you consider, what's a good beginner piece for someone on piano, a video game song that maybe they could start teaching themselves with?
Oh, good question. Also very hard to answer. Depends, really. I mean, when I say I start playing piano, I have an academic background in music. I don't play piano. I never like took piano lessons when I was studying, but you know, I know how piano works and I know how to learn an instrument, so to speak, which is why I probably started with stuff that's a bit too difficult if you're a complete beginner, because I started doing a little bit of like Die Die Dogs from Mario 64, and then kind of jumping straight into Xanarkand from Final Fantasy X. I would not recommend anyone start doing this. Maybe like the Left Hand of Dire Dire Dogs is something that people could play even with no prior experience. But other than that, what other songs might work? Maybe Hollow Knight. Yeah, the main theme from Hollow Knight is also doable, at least parts of it. Something like that.
Have your neighbors actually, this is from your, I know you were joking or making jokes in it, but your Chrono Trigger Motivation piano attempts video, where you're showing how it's, you know, you're really trying to get these 4 bars and you can't get them and you're trying again and again. Have your neighbors actually ever been upset while you were trying to like perfect a song? Have you ever had someone be like, hey, you've got to stop?
Weirdly enough, only twice in my entire life. Once in my old apartment, because like, I don't have much time to record music usually, because I do work full time, and which means I get up very early in the morning and I start recording right away at like 6 a.m. And for a while I did it without using headphones, but with a little amp, and especially with the bass early in the morning, if you're kind of woken up by me playing bass every morning at 6 a.m. One of the neighbors at one point came to my door and was like, hey, come on, stop it. We want to at least At least during on the weekends, we want to sleep in a little longer. So I stopped doing that. And then, only quite recently, because I bought a violin a few weeks ago on a whim. And that thing is really loud. So one of the neighbors was like, hey, can you maybe stop after like an hour and a half of trying to record something with it? And, you know, I get it. Those instruments can be quite nasty, especially if it's a beginner, in my case, who goes over the same thing over and over and over again. I get it, that can be annoying. But other than that, no, I have either very nice neighbors or it's really not that loud and annoying.
Well, you brought up getting up so early because, you know, you have a job, you got other stuff to do. Someone I was speaking to who has collaborated with you, they were saying they're not sure you ever sleep because, yeah, you have all this content. And they were specifically talking about you got your master's thesis and you're still putting out videos like every day. So you must just have this huge backlog. Like, you've got 900 videos on YouTube, in fact, in 3 years. I mean, when...
Yeah, I think it's over 1,000 now.
Are you just literally all the time, like, when you're not working, it's just arranging recording?
Pretty much, yeah.
So that favorite toy remains your favorite toy?
Absolutely. It just got a little more expensive, and I've got a few more toys than I used to have when I was a teenager, but it's the exact same thing still. And it's kind of amazing to me, because I figure at some point it's going to get boring, but it really doesn't.
How long did it take to arrange and record the entire Chrono Trigger soundtrack, which I think is a 3.5-hour piece?
Yeah, so I started looking into Chrono Trigger music in like late 2020, doing, you know, a song or two every now and then here and there. But the entire soundtrack is like 66 songs, and then if you add like the bonus tracks, it's like 5 more. So in total, like my Chrono Trigger soundtrack is 70 songs, and maybe, not even 10 of them, maybe 7 or 8 of them I did a while ago. But then earlier this year, I was like, okay, I'm just going to do the entire Chrono Trigger soundtrack, because why not? And I started that in early March. And it was finished by, what was it, April 20th? Something like that. Late April, I had finished everything.
Wow, that's pretty fast.
Yep. But to be fair, like some of the songs, because I really wanted to do every single track that is on the official soundtrack, and some of these songs are like short little jingles or stuff like that. Now, I didn't just play them as jingles. I actually really wanted to take every little piece of music there and turn it into something that you could sell as a song that's more than 5 seconds. But still, like many of these shorter ones, I did on some days, I did like 4 or 5 songs from beginning to end. So, and then you take all the normal, quote unquote, normal songs, at least 1 or 2 each day, and yeah, it's gonna quickly add up.
Is Singing Mountain from Chrono Trigger, is that still the most difficult song that you've done?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's weird because I'm singing there and I'm not really a singer, so doing vocals is certainly not a strength of mine, but I don't think it was that difficult.
Okay.
I've done really complicated songs over the years. I did the Silver Surfer song from the NES game, the first level music there. That was really difficult just because it's nonstop, you know, action. But I don't think it's very difficult, honestly, Sing Mountain.
All right, then. What made you do the lyrical version of that from the Chrono Trigger, the musical? Like, why did you want to do that version of Singing a Mountain?
It wasn't specifically that I wanted to do that version. I just quite literally looked at the song and thought, it's called Singing Mountain. Wouldn't it be funny if I sang something there? And then I just looked up if somebody had actually written lyrics for it, and then I stumbled on the musical version and was like, okay, I'm just going to take these lyrics. And that was the whole point behind it. There wasn't much thought into it other than, huh, funny, Singing Mountain, let's sing.
Did you have to, like, reach out to them and be like, hey, is it cool if I use these lyrics?
I looked through their channel, and usually what they write in some of the description is, like, if you want to use this stuff and give credit, then go ahead and use this stuff. So that's what I did. You know, I put the lyrics in the description of the video and was like, hey, adapt it from this video. Go ahead and have fun with it.
Let's talk about your master's thesis. So I actually, I didn't find much on this, which I regret. I wish I had more to specifically talk about here, but I hear it's on chiptune. What was your master's thesis?
Yeah, so it was about the how chiptune came to be and as like a music genre, and what the community behind it is doing, why the community is doing what it's doing, and how, you know, obviously early video game music, all of that came to be, and how to maybe adapt this very interesting community that is all about self-teaching, which obviously is appealing to me, and how to maybe implement that into like more traditional kind of music lessons. That was broadly speaking what I was researching there.
Is chiptune something that you do? Because most of what I've seen of yours is sort of metal, EDM. Chiptune, I guess, is sort of adjacent to EDM, but do you do any chiptune?
Not really. I don't know how to use like trackers or other, you know, traditional kind of software. At least not to the degree that it would be necessary. But the idea was, obviously, I'm into video game music, and I didn't want to go into video game music because that topic would have been way too broad. I would have had to narrow it down way too much. And I thought, let's just take something that is pretty much video game music, but a little bit different and a little bit more of an area that I'm not too familiar with. So it actually makes sense for me to like read a lot of stuff on it and research chiptune. So that's why I thought, okay, I'm just going to do it. And because I think, especially when doing any kind of academic research, a certain distance to the subject is helpful because you don't have too many emotional attachments to it. And I know plenty of people, especially musicians, who, when they research something and have to write a thesis or whatever, and it's about something that they truly care about, it's sometimes harsh to accept maybe some of the things you find out, be it, you know, about certain musicians or a certain style of music or whatever. And with chiptune, it was like, I know what it is technically, but I don't know too much about it, so let me go and start digging. And there's actually a lot of literature to be found about it, which I was, it, that blew me away, honestly. It was very nice. You know, there were books and books, like plenty of books for me to read and to draw inspiration from. It's a fascinating topic.
Off the top of your head, can you think of what was the most interesting thing you came across while researching for your thesis? What made you go like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
I think it was just having the chance to speak with Chris Hülsbeck, who's a pioneer in chiptune music. Because when he started doing this in like 86, he was like a 17-year-old student. And he was super into like the contemporary pop music, like the electronic music in the 80s, you know, bands like Kraftwerk. So he was super into all these modern synthesizer sounds, but he didn't have the money to buy a synthesizer himself. And then he saw an advert for the Commodore 64, which was advertised as, you know, this gaming computer now with a synthesizer sound chip inside. So he was like, damn, I gotta get me one of those. So he went out, bought one, and he couldn't, like, there aren't any programs at that point available to just write music with a Commodore 64. So he had to learn how to code an assembler, and like, I can't even imagine the amount of work he had to put in just to get a single note out of that thing. But he kept going, and there was this magazine over here, the C64 magazine in Germany, where he just sent them stuff every now and then. They had a so-called listing of the month where people would send in interesting programs they wrote, or, you know, digital art they created, or music. And he won the listing of the month in, when was it, July or June 86, with a song he wrote called Shades, which is an amazing piece of music. I would urge every listener to go ahead and check out Shades by Chris Hülsbeck if you don't know it already. And then just a few months later, he was, bored of having to write so much code for all the music he was writing. So he just created the first ever tracker software, the Sound Monitor, and published the Sound Monitor. And that kind of jump-started the whole chiptune scene in many ways, because that was the first program where you could actually input notes and music and phrases and loops and whatnot, that was more intuitive and much, much easier to use than, you know, having to code everything.
Cool. I'm going to have to check that song out.
It's really good.
You recently gave a lecture. You were invited to give a lecture on chiptune and early gaming music at Leipzig University of Music. Very quickly, you know, how did that go? What did you talk about?
Yeah, that was a really cool thing. They have like a project over there where they look into like home computer music specifically for it. So they're not like focused on like video game music or like what you can do with consoles. It's really mostly about like the Commodore 64 and Amiga scene in like the 80s and 90s. And there aren't many experts on this topic, certainly not over here in Germany. So I guess I can kind of claim to be one now. And that's why they invited me. And I pretty much gave a little bit of a, like an overview on, you know, how chiptune came to be, what you can do with it, and especially for musicians like myself, more traditional kind of musicians, how you can utilize chiptune sounds without having to use trackers or other, you know, old kind of hardware, without having to go through all the pain of coding, but still utilize these sounds, which is actually, it's much easier than maybe people think these days, with lots of plugins you can use. And just because many of the students there who they were like studying like music sciences, more so like music theory and stuff, and just discussing things like, is chiptune actually like a music genre or not, can be a discussion that can go on for hours without leading to a conclusion. And I enjoy just, you know, discussing things like that. And it was a very nice lecture. They were very open to everything. And I'd love to do more on that. I'd love to go more into academia and, like, teach chiptune and video game music, the history of it and whatnot. But, you know, that's all, you know, maybe in the future.
Do you get to work in a plug like, oh, by the way, if you want to check out my YouTube channel?
No, I didn't do that. Like that's not really like my. I really want to strictly separate like my online side with like my real life side. Right. Like, yeah, some of my friends know that I have this YouTube channel, but I don't go out and like be like, hey, I'm a YouTuber. You gotta check my stuff out. It's like, no, that's not what I do.
You don't show a picture of your Zero Suit Samus cosplay and say, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sure. We hang that up on the walls, like, everywhere I go.
I do want to talk about that, though. As far as I know, that was your first ever cosplay. Is it your only cosplay at this point? Have you done any more?
Yeah, it is the very first one that I've ever done, and it's quite peculiar.
I mean, it was received
maybe I'll do
very
some more.
Well.
Yeah, shockingly. I didn't even know that I could turn that many people gay, but here we go.
How uncomfortable was it wearing that tight bodysuit?
How much time do we have? Well, I mean, it is, yeah, like, I don't, where do you begin? Like, I'm not very familiar shopping for women's clothes, if you believe it or not. So I was just looking at it thinking, okay, what are the measurements there? Okay, chest, that might work. Okay, waist and hip. Or whatever, okay, that I think it should work. It didn't. It absolutely didn't. maybe I just did the math wrong. No, but it was too short, first of all. So there was actually, it went all over the legs. It's supposed to go all over the legs and the feet as well. This is a weird thing you can like pull over your feet. Now I couldn't do that just because I'm too tall for this suit. So I had to go, like, rip through the part with the feet, and like where the feet are supposed to be on the suit, that was like just below my knees, in order to get the entire suit up my my upper body. But then it was like too tight around the thighs. Obviously the crotch is kind of uncomfortable, and just getting it over my shoulders, that was the biggest issue. I think actually, you know, being able to close the zip behind my back over the shoulders. Yeah, women apparently have smaller shoulders. Who knew? So yeah, it was quite the struggle to get into that thing. And then it was really, really warm inside it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have a good time.
What is it? Totally switching gears here. What is your favorite civilization to play as in Age of Empires 2?
I love playing the Turks because their cannons have a longer range. That's always helpful. You can just, you know, position like 10 cannons outside the castle and the castle can do nothing. Mm-hmm. So Turks are awesome. I love the Vikings as well. And I've always been just kind of, I like the Aztecs. They're not a great civilization to play, but I'm just kind of drawn to them. I don't even know why. Maybe because I liked the Aztec campaign when I was younger.
Cool. Yeah, that was. I know that's pretty much your favorite game. It's certainly a favorite of mine from when I was younger. When I played with my brother, we had a lot of unwritten rules, like we would do no rush for however long because we wanted to build a city. We would not allow the Spanish because we thought they were overpowered. And sometimes we would not do Teutons as well.
Teutons are also quite nice.
But I think in the end, the longbowmen of the English were what really I ended up going with.
Yeah, those are pretty good. I mean, every civilization obviously has pros and cons. The Spanish, are they really that overpowered?
We're probably not very good, so like probably the wrong things felt overpowered to us. But I know they had like full monk technology, and they had conquistadors and that, so...
Yeah, they even had, like, the monks on donkeys.
Right.
Those were nice.
You've been questioning lately whether there's a market for what you do on stream. What's led you to question that?
It was not really questioning, just asking if people are actually kind of interested in what I do. Because there's all these music streamers playing video game music. Many of them small, many of them big. And... many of them, you know, play, for example, piano, where it's quote unquote easy, and I don't want to mock the piano players. But it's like you can sit down on the piano and play a piece from beginning to end all on your own, which is something that on guitar is just not really possible. Even like solo guitar is really difficult oftentimes when it comes to arranging it and having to learn everything, as opposed to like piano sheet music. If you're a good sight reader on piano, obviously. And I do that like on guitar, and I have like hundreds of songs in my repertoire. And I just don't know if there's a market for that. If people want to see a guitar player play hundreds of video game tracks all the time. So I was just kind of reaching out to like people on Twitch if that's a thing or not. Kind of, because I'm still kind of early, and kind of my Twitch career, so to speak, is quite young. So I just wanted to know if people are actually interested in that.
Have you had many responses yet? What have you heard?
Not really. Nope. Which, you know, fair enough. It is what it is.
Well, my opinion is yes, absolutely. I'd like to watch that.
Well, you can do that later tonight, actually. I mean, I'll be streaming in about 3 hours from now.
All right. For people listening, this will be coming out on a Monday, and we're recording on a Sunday, so I don't know if that actually checks out, but anyway.
Okay, but for those people, maybe, like, my schedule is I usually stream Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, around about 3 or 4 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
Roughly when I start.
Do you prefer YouTube or Twitch live streams, either one better than the other?
I mean, the thing is, Twitch is the live streaming platform, and YouTube is still kind of lacking in that department, just because the people who go to YouTube, they don't necessarily want live streams, or at least the large majority of them. So just based on that, you kind of have to go to Twitch, because that's where people go if they want to see live content. But both platforms have pros and cons. Obviously, my YouTube channel is much bigger than my Twitch channel is. But Twitch obviously has a lot more experience with live streaming, and YouTube is still kind of trying to figure out what to do with it. So I don't know. I really can't say. Given that I'm very, very small on Twitch, I'm lucky to have like 3 viewers on Twitch. There isn't much I can say about it, how it might feel if you're big on Twitch, comparably.
And I know you sometimes do music streams are obviously your bread and butter. Sometimes you do streams of you gaming, though. Does something bring on a gaming stream, or you're like, I need a break from music, or is it just sort of, that's what I'm doing today?
Well, the thing is, like, my music streams, I kind of view them as a concert, where I really just want to play music, have people there enjoy their the songs that I want to hear. But it's not, I try to interact as much as possible, but obviously when I'm playing a song that's 5 minutes long, then I won't be able to talk to people in the chat for 5 minutes. And in comparison to that, when I'm doing a gaming stream, I can just, you know, chill out, talk to everybody, have a good time with my viewers. And yeah, it's just, what's the point of playing music every day on stream in some regards? It's like, yeah, there's a lot of music I can play, but, you know, especially like the few people who watch my streams, they tend to want to hear the same songs. Sure, I love to play it for them, but, you know, what's the point of playing the same song 5 times a week? Yeah, so that's why the gaming streams are just, you know, nice and chill to catch up with, you know, what people in my community are up to.
I had a band way back when, and that actually, in a sense, kind of led to our demise. Was we played quite a few shows, but it was the same set list all the time. And certainly our guitarist and everyone except me was a brilliant musician, and they basically got to the point where they were like, I'm so sick of playing these things, I don't think I can do it anymore.
I feel that. Yeah, I had similar experiences. I used to play in this really awesome prog rock band. It was really great music, really fun guys, but we were just playing the same stuff over and over again. So after a few years, I was like, I love the music, but I want more.
Yeah.
I want more music. And that's why I left the band. And I really, like, I crave variety when I play music, which is part of why I record so much, just because I hate going through the same song over and over again. Like, when playing live, that's one thing. Like, if people want to hear Bloody Tears for the millionth time, I'm going to play that song because it's an awesome song. That's not even what I'm trying to say here for, like, people who watch my streams and be like, hey, play Bloody Tears. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to play Bloody Tears for you because it's a great song. But that's why I have, like, such a large repertoire. But it feels like, okay, but they still only want to hear, like, 10% of that all the time. And I'm like, maybe you want to hear some of that stuff now.
With such a large repertoire, with 1,000 videos out in 3 years, is there any fear? Are you going to, you know, 3 years from now, are you going to be like, I've played every video game song, there's nothing left for me?
Well, I had that fear very early on, because the thing is, I don't know many video games. I never played that many video games. So I didn't know much music from the games. And I started my YouTube channel uploading every day, because I was like, I'm not a big fan of pop culture at all. Kind of, once I finished high school, I kind of dipped out of pop culture around 2010. So I didn't really watch movies, or didn't even watch stuff on YouTube. I didn't really know what YouTube had become. And then when I was like, hey, maybe I should upload some stuff to YouTube, I had to, like, look up what actually YouTube is nowadays. And I literally just Googled, like, okay, best YouTuber. Okay, what does he do? Okay, what is this called? PewDiePie? Interesting. What does he do? Okay, he uploads every day. I guess that's what people do. I guess that's what I have to do. And I did it for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I was already stressed out just because I didn't know any more songs to do. But it turns out I keep finding new games, new amazing soundtracks, and if they could just stop releasing games for like the next 10 years, mm-hmm. I might be able to catch up and actually record every song from every game, and then they can start releasing new games again. Slowly.
Pretty much winding down here, I do want to ask about 8-Bit Battleground. Is that still ongoing? That is a thing you started, honestly, in 2021, where you had 8 musicians doing their version of the same song from a game, and then people got to vote on who did the best one, and you would have sort of like a podcast, a video podcast sort of interview with all of them at the same time, like a Zoom call. Very cool. Is that still ongoing?
Yeah, that's still ongoing. The way you described it, that was the beginning of it, where we'd all do the same song. We kind of changed the format up a little bit over the years, and we try to have a guest now every time. A different voice, because how interesting is it to talk to the same people every month? No, I love these guys. I'm super happy that they agreed to ever do this. It was really just me writing an email to each of them, being like, "Hey, I like your stuff. Do you maybe want to hang out sometime and like play some music every now and then together?" And it's pretty cool that, you know, now 2 years later we're still all good friends. We all hang out all the time, and most of us are still active and uploading music. So yeah, I was just blown away that they even agreed to do it in the first place. And yeah, they're good people, and it's still going on. We try to do it once a month. Sometimes it's a bit hard with, you know, the schedules of 8 people trying to make it work, you know, living on different continents and all that, but we try to make it work.
What's on the horizon? What should we look out for on your YouTube channel or your Twitch or anything?
Good question. That changes every single day. Sure. Like today I recorded a few songs from Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. That was a game that was recently suggested to me that I look into. And usually it's always in phases. Once I finished the Chrono Trigger soundtrack a few weeks ago, I was just bored of anything JRPG related, and then I started recording like 6 or 7 songs from the game Sea of Thieves, which is like, you know, pirate stuff. That's awesome. I needed that as a change. Then like 2 weeks ago, I was super into Geometry Dash. It constantly changes. Like my plans for tomorrow are maybe do some more Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, and then we'll see what happens.
Well, people can check you out, twitch.tv/badhairlineproductions, on YouTube at badhairlineproductions. Anywhere else you'd like them finding you?
I mean, technically I have like a Twitter and an Instagram page, but I don't really use them much. So, I'm usually just known as Bad Hairline Productions or Bad Hairline YT.
Bad Hairline, thank you so much.
It was very cool. Thanks for having me. And it's always good to talk about video game music.